You are listening to Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops, on hoopfeed.com.
Hi, everybody. This is David Siegel welcoming you to, you know, what is always one of my favorite podcasts to record, and that is The Roundtable. And we're talking NCAA hoops mostly. We may slip into WNBA as well, but we wanted to focus on the NCAA this week since we're in midseason. And there's a lot of uncertainty going on in the WNBA that we can address when things get a little bit clearer. But it's pleased to welcome the roundtable back, and we've got a good group for you tonight. So let me first start with ESPN, the best writer on the ESPN website by far, in my opinion, becoming more and more of a presence on screen, Michelle, with these little video segments too. Michelle Vopel joins us now. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how are you, David?
I'm doing great, thanks. You know, coming from the great Northwest these days, as well as the great heat of Arizona, I don't know how Cindy Brunson stops from getting pneumonia from going in and out of these climates. But we're pleased to have her on our roundtable again. How you doing, Cindy?
I'm doing great. Just getting started with Pac-12 Networks, calling some basketball, having a blast, living the dream.
Sounds great. And it's always nice to welcome the associate head coach. Do I have the title right, Steph?
Yeah, you got it right.
Okay. And Big Ten Network and ESPN college basketball analyst Stephanie White. Steph, welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
All right. Now, the first thing is I'll ask Cindy, because Michelle was at the game last night, and at the risk of giving Steph a little bit of an inflated ego, is that like the best trio of announcers on the UConn-Baylor game last night or what?
I tweeted out a thank you to ESPN for putting those three women on the telecast. It was phenomenal. If I put together a wish list of who I wanted on that call, my wish was granted.
You know, I thought it was just a great way of not sugarcoating the negative, but not overblowing it. And the same thing on the positive, not, you know, blowing up everything that somebody did that was good into great proportions, which is what I think is really great broadcasting. Steph,
and that's hard to do. It's easy to get into that trap of, oh, here we go, especially with the way that UConn can make a run and Baylor made stops and those kind of things were going on and the dicey foul calls. It could have been very easy to get sucked in, and those guys were so even-handed. It was tremendous.
Thanks, guys. You know, it was so much fun, and it was so nice to have a good, tight game and, you know, a contradiction in teams in terms of their experience, but what a learning experience for that young Baylor squad.
It was
I tell you, those Bears proved to me why they're second in the nation in rebounding. Boy, did they get after it defensively. I did not expect that effort from them on that end of the floor, and they were in UConn's grill all night.
You know, the interesting thing is that if you look at their schedule, I mean, they didn't have a great schedule. They only had the Kentucky game. And then for them to come out, and I know one of Kim's concerns was just it's the first time that these young kids have played in a true atmosphere game. And, boy, did they ever respond. And sometimes, you know, youth is such a good thing because there's no fear. They just go out and they play, and they play hard, and they compete. And I thought they were outstanding.
You know, Michelle, being our middle-of-the-country person here in Big 12 country, were you surprised to see the way that they came out and play? I had kind of anticipated a little bit of wilting under the limelight from the freshmen, but that sure was lacking.
You know, I know everybody's going to say, oh, you're just saying this because it happened. I swear to you, I would swear, like on every Cardinal World Series title, that I really thought Baylor would do what they did. And I'll tell you why. It is Kim Mulkey's personality and Odyssey Sims' personality. Odyssey did not have a great game last night, and I'm sure we can talk about that, but she is such a good leader for that bunch. And Kim is, I think she's rejuvenated by this group of kids. She really, you know, I asked her afterwards, was it frustrating to have kids after you've had, you know, this team that was a national championship contender really for the last 4 years? And she said, no, it's been really fun. You know, it's fun coaching them. It's fun teaching them. And I thought that's what we would probably get last night. And you know, as everybody saw, one of the things you have to do against Connecticut is you have to match their intensity. Because even when they're playing a team that's not very good, they are still so intense. They're still so focused on execution and doing things right. And even though Baylor cannot execute as well as Connecticut right now, and I don't think we expect them to, intensity-wise, I do think they matched it.
Yes, well, that's half the battle when you play a Connecticut team. You have to believe that you can beat them. And from the jump, I believe those Lady Bears believed that they could do just that.
I think that was definitely the case. And Steph, as someone who is a coach, is it sometimes when you have the pressure of being expected to win, like they were with Griner, is it sometimes a relief to be able to just coach and not have to worry about all that extracurricular, you know, pressure that goes with the type of person and dominant performer that Griner was?
Well, I think not only expectation level. But just different personalities, you know. That is a team that had a lot of different personalities. I'm not saying good or bad. It's just there are some teams, and Doris made the comment, and it was a perfect comment. There are some teams that you really love to coach because they're high energy and they just bring out something in you. And there are sometimes a team when it's hard to coach, and it's a long season, and it's a drag to coach. And it doesn't mean that they're bad kids. It doesn't mean that they don't work hard, that they don't play hard, but it's just sometimes you're managing so many different dynamics on a team. I don't know that that's the case for Kim Mulkey, but certainly I don't think that the pressure, having a pressure or not having pressure, bothers her one bit. But I definitely saw in Odyssey Sims and in Kim Mulkey, like Michelle mentioned, a rejuvenation. I mean, Odyssey Sims, with the exception of last night when she struggled, has played free. Like, there's a weight that's been lifted off of her shoulders. And Kim Mulkey was enthusiastic and energetic. And, you know, sometimes being a coach and being able to go back to teaching again, having a young group that you're really teaching and you're exploring new things with, sometimes that's a bonus.
You know, but the big thing about Kim was that she didn't wear a lizard or anything yesterday, and I was really disappointed.
That necklace was pretty chunky.
You know, I thought she tried to dress like the Notre Dame leprechaun to get in UConn's head, but I wasn't sure.
David, what was interesting is, like, they had those, they were giving away those lime green towels, and I had, like, this Notre Dame vibe in there. You know how Notre Dame has brought out the lime green before against mm-hmm. UConn. So it was funny when you're in there and everybody's, because obviously lime green is not Baylor's actual color, but there's all these lime green towels. I was like, you know, this is the closest we're going to get, at least during the regular season, to Notre Dame UConn.
Well, the two of them are sitting on top of the polls. They're both undefeated. Let's start with talking about the Huskies for a minute because of the game last night. You know, we certainly saw some exposure to pressure a little bit with some of the players, but, you know, and there was definitely their depth was exposed somewhat with Morgan Tuck being injured, and they only played six players last night, and Chung was basically a throw-in when they needed to give the guards a break. But, you know, were we exposed to anything that really will show up down the road, because they still ended up going to Baylor and winning by double digits?
All I could think of was the fact that their little American schedule is really not helping them for matchups like this, and that down the road, Gino Auriemma is going to have to schedule a BCS-style conference slate preseason before he takes on these American foes, so that his team can be up to snuff and have a sense of what's expected before they start conference play and get ready to win their conference and then proceed on to the NCAA tournament. That just leapt off the page at me last night, because you could tell that UConn was used to executing against the Houstons of the world, and the Baylors of the world were a much different story.
Steph, watching the game up close like that and trying to get inside their heads as an analyst, you know, the one thing that I really did notice is, you know, we've seen Gino do some yelling and screaming over the years, but he kept his cool last night. He hardly ever seemed, at least on television, to, you know, be getting really upset.
Yeah, it seems like over the last few years we've kind of seen that a little bit. And, you know, there's a change in dynamics in terms of players nowadays. I mean, you know, you don't have very few, I guess you should say, of the Diana Taurasis, of the Sue Birds, of the for lack of a better term, the enforcer on the floor, and I mean within your own team. And, you know, Cindy brings up a good point, because I'm not sure, while this team is skilled enough, I'm not sure that mentally they are tough enough to be able to bring it every single day. And as you go into this conference, and fortunately they have a couple of matchups with Louisville, you know, you've got to be able to now turn it back on for the postseason, schedule really hard in the non-conference to prepare yourself. Then you kind of go through a lull. And if you don't have that player on your team that is not allowing them to do that, because Gino's been doing that for how many years, to not allow them to settle every day in practice, but you got to have somebody in that inner circle that doesn't allow them to settle. And I'm not sure who that is on this team. It could be Stephanie Dolson. I'm not sure that they have that right now, and I think that that's one of the concerns that I would have moving forward, is that I don't have that leader. I don't have that person that's holding their teammates accountable every single day.
Dave, if I could jump in real quick, I think Steph's really onto something, but one thing that was really interesting about the press conference last night is that Gino made a point of saying Bria Hartley came alive in the second half, both the way she played and verbally. He said, I heard her say things in the huddle that I haven't heard her say before. And he's more used to Stephanie Dolson being almost like the de facto leader, which she has been. But he felt like last night he saw that very thing that Steph's talking about start to come out in Bria. And, you know, we've seen this before, where sometimes it really does take to the last semester of your senior year, and especially for a guard sometimes, maybe they're deferential to some other players, but they're the one that has to do it eventually. And I don't mean like a center can't lead the team, certainly somebody like Candace Parker did, but for the most part we are talking about guards that have to do that. And that will be interesting to see if Bria continues to be that verbal, that much of a leader. I sense a change in her just in talking to her, that she's ready to do that now.
So Michelle, an interesting thing is after the Houston game, which was one of the last home games that they played, Gino was talking about just that fact, that, you know, he thought that Bria would be more of a leader by this point, but that she was, you know, this is projecting back, he expected this. But last year really took a lot out of her mentally, the injuries and not being able to come back up to speed. But then playing USA basketball over the summer and getting back to being healthy, he felt that this was coming, exactly like you were talking about, that sometimes it does take until the very end of someone's career. But by the end of that career, they can certainly take over and show some leadership. You know, the thing that a lot of people are forgetting, continuing on the UConn team, is you take away those two, and you're dealing with sophomore Stewart, sophomore Jefferson, sophomore Tuck, you know, junior in KML. But, you know, this is a young team, and people keep forgetting that, too. When you put them in pressure like that, they've played so many big games, it's easy to overlook. You know, Steph, USA Basketball, if you look at it, between the UConn girls, Odyssey Sims, Chinee, when she played, Kayla McBride, and this is an incredible group of USA players that has really improved by doing so.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, every time you gain international experience, you're playing with and against great players, different types of players. You gain so much confidence. And, you know, we saw the wave of the 96 and 2000 when Lisa Leslie and Dawn Staley and all those guys were going out, and the Tamika Catchings and Diana Taurasi and Sue Bird were coming in. And now we're seeing this again. And, you know, you just can't underestimate the value of the international experience. And also those guys competing against each other. That's the best of the best. Every day in practice while they're preparing to go over there, being with each other, bringing out the best in each other. And that camaraderie, I think, also helps because it improves your competitive spirit, but it also allows you to kind of to get to know each other's strengths and weaknesses a little bit, too, and learn to play with other players.
Now, we talked about the American Conference not doing any favors for UConn, but at least, you know, you look at their schedule and they have – they were able to play Stanford and Maryland, you know, and Penn State, who I'm going to use in a negative sense in this time, because Penn State's are not exactly proving out to be as good as some of the people thought it was. But, you know, I look at Maine, who is sitting there at 15-0, and everybody's going to get on my case about this. Michigan State, DePaul, and Penn State are the three teams that were ranked that they played. They struggled against Virginia, Oregon State. Are they that good?
You know, it's the case of the usual suspects. And I think Notre Dame, just by its street cred and history and schedule and Muffet McGraw leading the way, gets a lot of credit when it comes to the polling. And I'm very curious to see how they play out in conference and what they do in conference tournament to see how the seeds go out. Being undefeated, of course, gives you cachet, and I get that. I understand that. But I'm very curious to see how it all plays out. I had Stanford on the brain only because I think that's another team that, while looks very impressive record-wise, has demonstrated a lot of weaknesses. And, you know, God forbid, if Chinne Ogumike sprains an ankle, where's the depth on that team to get them through? And I see the same sort of thing with a Notre Dame team. So that's where I'm at with that. I love what the Fighting Irish have done. I love that they're going to be in the conversation, especially with the injury to Chelsea Gray at Duke. The Blue Devils are no longer going to be a one seed in my mind, so the Notre Dame one seed is right there for the taking. I just need to see more play against better competition, and I guess that means conference tournament time into the NCAA tournament.
David, real quick, you know, I think one of the things that separates a Connecticut and a Notre Dame, well, two things. One, they're tough. I mean, just toughness. You know, they're moving to the ACC, which is a pretty good league, a very athletic league, but I'm not sure they've seen the toughness that Notre Dame will bring to that league and that Connecticut has as well. We saw it at the end of the game, the mental toughness to be able to go out. And then the second thing is the execution. We're talking about two of the most highly skilled and high IQ teams in the country. And both of those teams in Connecticut and Notre Dame can make up for a lot of things. Are they going to be challenged? Absolutely. Do they have weaknesses? Sure. But when it comes down to crunch time, toughness and execution, and they find ways to win ball games.
Michelle, I still have to wonder, when it comes to a big game, as much as I love Kaylin McBride, and you've been on these long enough that you know that she's one of my favorites, you know, and Achunwa, and even the youngsters that have come in, and Jewel Lloyd is tremendous, I still got to think that Diggins brought that point guard presence, and again, we get back to the guard discussion and the leadership. You know, who's going to really – can McBride fill that slot? Is somebody else going to be able to do that for Notre Dame?
I think so. Now, David, I have to admit, I am maybe the most bullish person on Notre Dame I just believe in them. And maybe I'm wrong, and I'll certainly admit it. I really think this is a good team. And I know there's been a lot of question about, oh, they haven't played as tough a schedule. But part of it I understand for a couple of reasons. When you lose your senior point guard and when you're joining a brand new conference, I mean, you're really having a huge change for your program in terms of travel, places, you know, that you've never gone before, even for the coaching staff. I mean, they're learning a lot of new teams. You know, certainly when you're Muffet McGraw, if you're in the Big East for however many years, I'm not saying you don't have to work hard on every scout, but there's some things you come in knowing. This is all new. So I understand why maybe they didn't have what maybe people say is a super, super, super tough non-conference schedule. That said, ACC is a pretty good conference. They're going to go to Tennessee next Monday. And in terms of Kaylin McBride, A WNBA GM who I really respect told me that Kaylin McBride played as well, if not better, than any of the collegians last year last year when they had the training camp in Las Vegas. Obviously, Brianna Stewart impressed a lot of people then too. So I get this sense that Kaylin McBride can be the leader, and that she's going to be the one that can you know, add that extra toughness. And when you talk about execution, which Steph did, and nobody knows that better than she did because she played, you know, she was a guard, you have to have that toughness to be able to get to do it even when you're not shooting well. And that's what I think. I think McBride can do that. Even when Notre Dame's going to have off games, I think she can still help the Irish execute.
The question for me, though, is can McBride bring it like Dickens did, in the sense that she would get in her teammate's face and say, what the you-know-what, let's get it together, and put people on blast and call them out. And I don't see McBride doing that yet. And if she does it, that takes them to another level. And then I go, all right, Fighting Irish, I'm believing in you. I haven't seen that out of McBride yet.
I'm not sure she has that. I think that Diggins' leadership style was unique. And we don't see a lot of people with that type of leadership style. I think she's got a different type of style. I think that it's just a little bit like it is with Geno. Muffet has to find a way to be that voice too, and see other leadership styles develop. Sort of like if Hartley's starting to come on and be a leader as well, I think McBride will. I don't think that she'll call her teammates out. But the other thing that I think that McBride has is she's got a swag about her. She's got an air about her, and not an arrogance in a bad sense, but you have to have that walk. You have to have that confidence. You have to have that belief that nobody can stop me. And I think she has that. And that's one of the reasons why they're going to continue to be successful, as well as the way that Jewel Lloyd is progressing and the way that Achung was playing. But I think she just has that air about her.
But when they used to play, when McBride played against Connecticut, I used to joke around that I thought in her spare time she kicked around Husky pups just to get ready for them, because she just dominated them.
I hope it was stuffed animal Husky pups.
Oh, stuffed.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah,
see, Dave,
yeah,
just making me miss the Big East all over again. Thanks a lot for that.
Hey. Yeah, well, how do you think I felt sitting watching Houston play, huh?
On the heels of Temple, really?
Well, let me just tell you, I was sitting there listening to Michelle talk about how tough Muffet McGraw has it having to play in this new conference, and I kept thinking, well, Geno's got it tough. Okay, never mind.
Okay, oh, maybe not.
I bet, you know what, though, Geno would, let's just be honest here, Geno would love, he would much rather be in the ACC. I mean, he can't say necessarily, well, maybe he can say that, I don't know, Geno can say anything, but he would much rather, he loves competition. I mean, last night, I think he was really happy to have that game. He said, you know, this is what we love to do. Who likes those horrible, you know, win by 50? I mean, maybe you want a couple of those in non-conference, but, I think he'd love to be in the ACC.
I had a piece on Hoop Feed this week where we discussed just that, and you're absolutely right. That was exactly what he said. So, but dominate the show too much with Connecticut conversation. So what was interesting in talking about, you know, Stanford and Notre Dame, and then Duke came up as well with the injury to Chelsea Gray, you know, most of the other teams are just, the injuries are showing them all to be flawed. There's injuries and various other factors that we don't really, even though there's, you know, six teams in the top of the polls that have one loss or less. And then you have South Carolina there, too, with one, Iowa State, Oklahoma State. Does anybody think that any of these teams could compete against, you know, last year's Baylor team, or, you know, any of the national championship teams? All of these teams seem like they have flaws this year.
Well, a lot of those teams that you mentioned certainly don't have that elite vibe. But then I didn't think last year that Louisville could beat Baylor. So I am more than ready to sit back and be pleasantly surprised.
Let's talk about Louisville for a second, since you, the master of the segue there. interesting conversation with Lynn Dunn and Rebecca Lobo a couple weeks ago about coaches and getting them to the next team, their teams to the next tier, on one of our podcasts. Jeff Walls was the name that came up from both of them right away as the coach that is next available to take their team to the higher level. Michelle, is that what you think also about Jeff Walls? And what do you think about this year's team so far, what you've seen?
You know, I would say he has taken his team to what I would say is that next to the very, very top level. He's gone to two Final Fours. He pulled what I think was, I really believe was the biggest upset in NCAA women's. I honestly, if somebody would have had me bet probably my life savings on that Louisville-Baylor game, I'd be destitute now, because I didn't think there was any way Baylor was going to lose that game. So he's done so much of this already. When you look at who did he lose the two national championship games to? I mean, he lost it to, you know, the Maya Moore superstar UConn team, and then last year. That's the only thing that stood in his way of winning two national championships. So it's, you know, can – I don't – you know, I think he's at that level, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And in terms of this Louisville team, they've already been through a really tough thing with Anthony the Slaughter, and that they thought, you know, perhaps – I mean, I can't imagine how scary that is when you feel like maybe a teammate you've – you know, you're really afraid for her life while there. Now she's come back. I think they're rejuvenated. And they have a regional, which is no small thing. That's, you know, I keep coming back to that. They're going to be at home. You know, if they make it to a Sweet 16 or an Elite Eight, they're going to be playing right there in Louisville.
I love what he's done. Whether he's buying beer for fans that show up or what have you, he has created such a sensational, you don't want to miss this team play vibe. And it's worth its weight in gold. I think what he is doing is fantastic for Louisville and for women's basketball overall. And I think they're going to be a player. You mentioned all of those teams with one loss, maybe undefeated, that you're not quite too sure about. This guy will coach up who he has on that bench and in that starting five, and watch out, because he clearly is ready to think outside the box. I can't match up with Baylor, so I'm going to shoot threes until arms fall off. I mean, he's willing to go there. He's got that crazy magician's kind of vibe, and it's awesome, and I can't wait to see what he does.
You know,
I think you said it just right. You know, thinking about coaching up his players. He doesn't have the five All-Americans or the four All-Americans, but he gets them every single day to believe in themselves, to believe in each other, and the thinking outside the box is key. How many times is it, oh, we're just going to adjust to what they're doing, or we're just going to play the play, and we're just going to do things the same way that we've always done them? He's not like that. And he'll take chances, and if they win, they win. If they don't, they don't. But he's able to get his players to believe in their schemes and get his players to believe in themselves, unlike anybody we've seen in a long time.
One thing I wanted to say with Jeff, and I mean this, and I think Brenda Fries would say that Jeff won a national championship as an assistant, and he was such a huge part of that Maryland team strategically. And if you guys have ever sat next to Jeff during a game, I've sat next to him when he was watching another team in an NCAA tournament. Just listening to how he could predict what was going to happen every time down the court. He just has that kind of mind, and I think that combined with what we're talking about, his willingness to take some chances and push the envelope, and he's still a relatively young guy, I really do think he's going to win a national championship at Louisville before it's over, maybe a couple of them.
You know, I think perhaps the hardest job in America, though, is being a referee in a Jeff Walls coached game, because every play Jeff has a. You know, Steph, you were talking about Kayla McBride's attitude. Then there's Shoni Schimmel, which is Kayla McBride squared.
Exactly, and you know, and Shoni's the same way. She's just got that swag about her. She believes every time she steps on the floor that she's the best player out there, that she deserves to be there, that she's going to make every shot. And when you believe that, your teammates believe that about you. They believe that about themselves. They believe that you have chances to win ball games. You know, there is just something to be said. You know, I always think about Katie Douglas. You know, Katie Douglas was a really good college player. Katie Douglas is a great pro because she has that edge. You know, it's the borderline arrogance. Nobody can stop me. I know nobody can stop me. I'm going to go out here and I'm going to prove it every single day. And Shoni Schimmel has that. You can't teach that. It's just something that she's born with. And that's why that team is able to be so successful. Jeff Walls and what he does, and he has that same type of attitude. And Shoni Schimmel.
Yeah, I see in women's basketball in particular, because I've been covering both the men and women season, and it's the confidence level is so important. for the women's side. They have to know what they bring to the floor every night and believe it to their core, and then get the support from their coach and their friends and their family, where some of the fellas just walk out and they just got it. But I noticed with the women, it's more of a support thing, except for some of these standout individuals that we've been talking about who just have that swagger. That's why I think Washington State is at 4-0 atop the Pac-12, because they have a healthy Tia Presley for the first time in her career, and she's got that swagger. She brings that, we got this, guys, don't worry about it, follow my lead, let's go. And it's so important. It's a game changer. It's helped June Doherty take that program that was absolutely flatlined and breathe life into it. She's been waiting for that one individual to go, come on, guys, follow me, and she has it in Tia Presley.
Okay, who had 30 minutes in the pool on when Cindy was going to bring Washington State up?
They are atop the Pac-12 now. Come on.
Cindy, I would never have let this whole thing go without bringing Washington State up for you, so I'm glad that you did it. You know, I do want to take a quick look. We've talked about some specific teams. I want to take a quick swoop around the country and look at some of the conferences. And, Cindy, why don't you start with the Pac-12, the way you're talking about. You know, I had expected more out of UCLA. I was being very pleasantly surprised by Washington State. Colorado seems to be about what everybody expected from them. And Stanford is Stanford. You know, Cal getting Brandon back, though, you can't talk about – the Pac-12 without talking about that too.
No, not at all. To me, the Pac-12 is Stanford at one, and then everybody else down the way is 1A. The conference is so evenly matched thanks to a couple of key injuries on several different teams that night in and night out, anybody is capable of beating anybody else. And my fear going into the NCAA tournament is that only 4, maybe 5 teams will get into the tournament because everybody's conference mark is going to be so beat down, except for Stanford's, probably. And the numbers just aren't going to look impressive as you look at win-loss. But the Pac-12 is the number one rated RPI conference in the nation. So if you factor that in, bottom line, you're just getting great games night in and night out. The last two Civil Wars this week, my goodness gracious, this gal, Ruth Hamblin, 6'6", from British Columbia, she's just a sophomore, records the first triple-double in OSU history in 30 years, 23 points, 12 rebounds, and a school record 10 blocks. If this kid can stay out of foul trouble, Agumake is going to have her hands full and then some when they meet up. And then Colorado, like you mentioned, refusing to fall out of the top 25. They've been in the top 25 for, 25 straight AP polls. I mean, there is such a dearth of talent now. And it's not just one player on each team. It's one or two or three players emerging now on the teams not named Stanford. And it's just making for a crazy competitive atmosphere, a lot of high-scoring games. Oregon, despite stumbling, still the highest-scoring team in the nation. So I'm so proud and happy that I have a front-row seat for this.
And, Cindy, we'll keep it out west with you for a few minutes. We got to talk for a second about the WCC also. Gonzaga, with a huge win, jumps back into the top 25 this week. But San Diego was doing some nice things. Brigham Young is getting a vote here and there as well from a coach at least. You know, that's a fun conference going too. St. Mary's, a lot of fun going out there.
And everybody scores the basketball. And, of course, Gonzaga knows that it will likely have home court in an NCAA situation like it has at the Spokane Arena in years past. And that's all that team wants to play for. And I just love Sunny. I can't get enough of Sunny. This woman is so fun to watch. She just scores the basketball at will, such a good team leader, such a floor general. It's amazing. I can't get enough of it. You can't discount what the WCC is doing, but I always put the Pac-12 and its slog of a schedule ahead of the elite of the WCC because they just aren't going to have the tough go night in and night out like teams in the Pac-12 will.
And I would be remiss if I didn't mention the job that Charlie Turner Thorne has done with Arizona State, getting them back up after people basically had written her off as a coach too.
Yeah. No, she's been phenomenal. And again, they've had their ups and downs at Arizona State. they're happy that Arizona's 0-4 right now in conference play. They have that to feast on. But, you know, I'm going to see what Cal does at the Arizona schools. They've got that trip this weekend. I'm very curious to see how that plays out. Again, just intense competition and a lot of fantastic players. I don't know if you guys have heard about or seen Kelsey Plum play, the point guard for University of Washington freshman. Spectacular. There is not a weak phase in her game, and I can totally understand now why she was invited to the under-19 national team. Just absolutely sensational and a leader. Mike Nabors made her a captain as a freshman. That just doesn't happen. She's the total package, and I cannot wait to see her career over the next 4 years because she's already dominated. She dropped a career-high 30 the other day on Washington State.
Wow. Michelle, Charlie Cream is putting 6 Big 12 teams into the tournament this year at this point. That seems an interesting number. I could see arguments to hear both ways, but the Big 12, you know, Baylor is certainly now – you know, you'd have to say exerted itself and shown that it should still be at the top.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's I think here's the thing. You know, the bottom, the Big 12 is different now because it's, even though it's the Big 12, it's 10 teams. It fairly consistently throughout Big 12 history has had 6 and 7 teams. And part of that tends to be that you get to a point where if you're going to take this team, you kind of have to take this other team because there tends to be at least, you know, from, you know, there's a lot of parity in the conference. What I look at this year is I do think Baylor has, and what we saw last night, I think Baylor once again is the favorite, even though a lot of us probably didn't necessarily know that that would be the case after all the graduation losses. Oklahoma State's a team I think can do a lot, and they have a guard, Tiffany Bias, so I think she's got that swagger, definitely, and is a very good player and is definitely the leader of that team. Iowa State, you know, even though they lost Chelsea Poppins, they have, you know, they're Iowa State. They're going to shoot them their three-pointers, and they're, that's how they're going to try to beat you. A team that I'm not – I just don't know exactly how good they are is West Virginia. We're sort of waiting to see that. And then you have, you know, Texas and Oklahoma, two other teams, I think. I'm not sure right now how good they are. The bottom of the Big 12 is terrible, though. You know, those Kansas State, Texas Tech are not very good teams. I don't think TCU's particularly good team. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if 6 make it in part, again, because of the parity that's going to be kind of there in the middle, if you will.
I love Mike Carey as a coach. He's always, I felt, been underrated. His teams play extreme physical basketball, getting a little bit better. These rule changes didn't help him. I'll just put it that way. But Bria Holmes from Connecticut, who got out of this state, is one heck of an offensive player, one of the best I've seen Mike have.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is now they've had, this is their second go-around in the Big 12. It is still incredibly weird that they're in the Big 12. I don't know how many more years left to be in there where it won't seem so weird, but they do have that experience now of having played in the Big 12. And you know, you're right in terms of how good a coach he is, how good a defensive coach he is. And, you know, I think that's been one of the things that he's brought into the conference. But I tell you what, when Baylor went out to West Virginia and won, that was a really good indicator that this Baylor team, I think, was better than maybe people thought that they might be.
I agree with you. I thought that West Virginia was going to beat them there because what people, a lot of people don't realize also is it sucks getting to West Virginia. So,
yeah.
So these Big 12 teams, as much as it sucks for West Virginia to get to the other schools, they have all those home games that it sucks to get to. So it's going to always be a real home court advantage.
Dave, you have somebody on the call.
Yeah, I'm just saying getting there.
That's all. There you go.
So before I get in trouble, Steph, let's talk about the Big Ten. And I thought that, you know, Kurt Miller was on a couple weeks ago, and he made a great comment. I thought that was so true. He said that they may not have the best teams in the country, but from top to bottom, the Big Ten is probably the best one through what through how many 11 teams that there are in one conference.
Yeah, I think more than any other year, and Michelle mentioned the Big 12 being a little bit, you know, a distinction between the top and bottom, and the Big 10 was like that for so many years. You had your top five teams, and everybody else was just mediocre, and it's not like that. You know, there's been an infusion of young, talented players. I mean, Northwestern starts three freshmen and two sophomores. You know, Kurt Miller's team that starts four new players, three of which are freshmen. You know, I think Ohio State, what Kevin McGuff has done has been truly amazing. They're way better than anybody expected them to be. Now they've got multiple personalities right now, but they're trying to figure that out. But you know, I think he's exactly right. Top to bottom, it's the strongest the league has ever been. And there are no given W's. And a little bit like Cindy mentioned with the Pac-12, you know, they're going to beat each other up. The teams are going to win games that on the road that they shouldn't. Teams are going to win or lose games at home that they shouldn't. And I think we're going to see them really beat each other up as you lead into the conference tournament. And then you get to play teams for a third time in the conference tournament, which a lot of times ends up knocking you out of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and it seems like based on recent performances and the way things seem to be falling out, it looks like that Purdue seems to have overcome a little bit of shakiness at the start of the year. And may become, you know, that team that becomes the tournament champion, you know, the sweetheart that takes on the tournament and succeeds.
Yeah, there's something about that tournament with Purdue. They always seem to find a way to win, and I'm not really sure. You know, I think the jury's still out a little bit. You know, one of the trademarks of Sharon Versip's teams has always been defense and rebounding. You know, they're in the bottom of the league in nearly every defensive category right now. I think they're trying to find an identity. You know, they graduated a front court that was steady and that was consistent. I think that their back court for senior leaders still turn it over a little bit too much. But they're certainly always right there. And Sharon, it does such a good job of continuing to build and not peak too early, peaking at the right time, and to get them by tournament time to really just believe in themselves and come together as a team. I think the most dangerous team in the Big Ten is going to be Michigan State. Now they have athletes, they've got experience, they have balance, and they have offense, which they've really never had. But they haven't quite put it together. They've dealt with injuries. They've got some new players that are just starting to get healthy. So I think that they certainly have potential. Now, whether that potential develops by the end of the season, I'm not sure. But I think that on paper, they could be the most dangerous team in the conference.
You know, the one that concerns me, for lack of a better way to put it, is Nebraska. And because, you know, the way that things were drawn up for them to get a regional, for them to possibly be on the cusp of not making the tournament based on how they play the rest of the way, you know, that's going to be an interesting thing that's going to going to be an interesting story as we head towards the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I think so, and Michelle can probably comment on this too. You know, I didn't think that they did themselves any favors in the non-conference scheduling, didn't play great competition. You know, I think that losing a four-year starter and Lindsey Moore certainly hurts. They have capable players around Jordan Hooper, but they haven't been that consistent, and they spread you out, and they shoot a lot of jump shots, and if they make them, they win ball games, and if they don't, they lose ball games, and that's a tough way to play.
And I think the thing about the Big Ten, as Steph said, that is so I always think of it as the logjam conference, where you think you have an idea. Okay, this is who I really think are the top, you know, three or four teams, and then that can change within a month. That could change like five times, just based on, you know, upsets or somebody not particularly playing well at this place and then some getting surprises. It is really, in my mind, a fun conference to watch because you don't know a lot of times. And I do think, and Steph can speak to this, certainly having played, I think sometimes the home court's a big deal in the Big Ten. You know, you have some really good home court crowds. And the what the other thing I'm really interested in the Big Ten, and we'll see it, we're starting to see it this year, but then long term, Purdue has owned Indiana, obviously. Is Indiana going to, you know, are they really going to start becoming a power? Is that something that Kurt can do? Because that will be interesting if that Purdue-Indiana matchup really becomes like a real rivalry. I think that would be great for, you know, for the Hoosier State to have that in women's basketball.
I agree. I would love to see, and I'd love to see that so far the administration has really gotten behind Kurt. But, you know, we know in the past, you know, that Indiana hasn't really given much of a hoot about women's basketball, and maybe, you know, for the last decade or so. Hopefully that this will continue and the love affair will grow and not be short-term.
Well, it certainly doesn't hurt when you have Brian Agler flying out to watch his daughter play Indiana either.
You know, these coaches' daughters, I'm telling you, they're taking over these places, you know?
Oh, it's kind of awesome. I agree, just on the point really quick that Steph made about Nebraska. Man, it's Jordan Hooper and not much else. If Hooper's on, look out. But she had a bad shooting night against Washington State University, and at their house, Wazoo went in and got a win against a top 10 team for the first time in forever. So, I'm very curious to see if they can get some more consistency, because on paper, Nebraska looks very appealing. But based on what I've seen firsthand, I'm just waiting for them to put it all together.
They are still 12-3 and 2-1. I mean, I don't sense Nebraska. I mean, there's a lot left to go, but to me, right, I not see them as not being an NCAA tournament team.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see, that's for sure. Now, let's skip into a couple of the bigger conferences now. Now, we don't have anybody geographically located in the SEC or ACC on the conference call right now, but everybody seems to certainly know about it. So, you know, Cindy, let's talk a little bit about the SEC for a second. Now, you know, Tennessee came in with a lot of press clippings and a lot of people expecting them to make the run towards the tournament in the home state. You know, I had said Kentucky, I thought, was going to be the team that was the team to come out of the SEC as championship. South Carolina, though, is putting everybody to shame right now, and Dawn Staley is proving to be one hell of a coach.
Yeah, it's coaching that's separating. Tennessee was picked to be, you know, the SEC champion by the media at the beginning of the season. Everybody was buying what they were selling, but they just can't get it together on the floor all at once, and I'm not quite sure why. They are so tantalizing as you look at that roster. All that length, all that speed from Megan Simmons and ability to score the basketball. And for whatever reason, it's just not working. And it's frustrating as a fan of somebody that, you know, sat alongside Kara Lawson for years on end and kind of gets sucked into the orange thing to not see that team do well. But I love what's going on with the Gamecocks. I think that's exciting. It's a fun style of basketball to watch. And like you say, Dawn Staley could already etch her name on a Coach of the Year trophy right now.
You know, Steph, we talk about, you know, the Breanna Stewarts, and, you know, you could come up with a myriad of top names, Maggie Lucas and Brittany Boyd and all these exciting players. I defy most non-real heavy-duty fans to name one player on South Carolina's roster.
I think you're right. I know I haven't seen them live this year, but, you know, I think one thing that Dawn Staley brings is a little bit like Kim Mulkey. You know, she's just a competitor, and she believes every single day that they're going to win, and she prepares that team to win basketball games. You know, they went into Purdue and beat Purdue at home in the NCAA tournament because they were tough, because they defended the crap out of you, because they played so hard. They were athletic. They got to the rim, and I think she's finally got a mix of talented enough players to compete in that league, and then the style of play that she likes to play and preparation. So, I mean, it certainly takes a mix of all those things, and I think that she's finally at a point in South Carolina, and she's chipped away every single year, and now she has a team that can be successful.
Well, I tell you what, David, I think you're right about the name thing with South Carolina, and I think that's been, you know, since she's been there, you tend to think of South Carolina, but you don't think of individual stars. I think that reflects how Dawn Staley tends to coach. She They don't have an individual star mentality. But if you want to think of two names for South Carolina, two players to watch, and they're both youngsters. You've got Tiffany Mitchell, a sophomore guard who's leading the team in scoring, and a player I think is going to be in the running for SEC Freshman of the Year. That's their freshman center, Elena Coates. And, you know, the SEC, we talked about the Big Ten is so interesting to watch. Boy, I'm telling you, the SEC is interesting so far, and I think it's just going to continue to be interesting. You have Vanderbilt, you know, one of the most tortured teams in women's basketball in terms of their rivalry with Tennessee. They beat Tennessee. That's a huge deal for them. I mean, now they have nine. I have a couple of friends who played at Vanderbilt back in the 90s, and they were all over Facebook saying, oh, my God, we finally got nine victories total against Tennessee. But that was a big win. You look at Georgia, they're at the bottom of the SEC. They're 0-4. This is a really tough conference top to bottom, and traditionally the SEC has been this way, but I think it's very legitimately an extremely tough conference game in and game out. I don't know that there are any really bad teams. You look at Arkansas, you know, went into conference season, I believe, undefeated, and they've already lost, you know, three games in the SEC. It's just a really, really tough conference.
And we haven't even mentioned Texas A&M, who is always competitive, and Coach Blair always has his team ready to play aggressive defense as well. And the 40 minutes of dread, which I think when you add Stallworth back to the equation when she comes back for Kentucky, she gives them that little bit of inside difference that makes them a much more exciting team and a much more difficult team to defend. I think you're all right. I think that the SEC is wide open. And that is most definitely a team that is going to get a whole lot of tournament recognition and a whole lot of tournament success, I think, as they go forward. Now, Tennessee is the one that we talk about guard play, and it always seems to come back to me. I look at Tennessee's front court, and it is so good. And those talent, and I love Graves in particular. She's one of my favorites. The guard play just doesn't seem to get them the ball in the right place at the right time. It just always seems that little bit off, at least to me. Yeah, I'm not sure how you guys feel. Michelle, you know, what is there something lacking about the Tennessee team? Are they just still learning? Or, you know, what is it about Tennessee that seems a little bit off this year?
You know, there's something that I found in my career that people will say, if so-and-so just gets consistency, she's going to be a great player. And what I find is that will be something that may be said about that person their entire career, that they don't ever really become consistent. I think consistency is a tool. People either are or they aren't, and they can become consistent. There are some players who have started their career inconsistent and have become more consistent, but others, they're going to be brilliant sometimes, and they're not other times. And when you have that in a guard, and I'm talking about Megan Simmons.
I'm thinking about Megan Simmons while you're talking.
We keep saying if she becomes really consistent, that's the key for Tennessee. Well, she's a senior now. Is it going to happen? I think that's an issue with them. She is obviously at times a great player, but like you said, can they count on her to consistently do what she needs to do? I mean, we've seen games where she has shot them out of the game, and we've also seen games where she saved them. And I just think that consistency with her is something that, you know, I don't know that we're going to see it while she's still in college.
Well, I think we all know that when it comes to winning close games and when it comes to tournament time, it's about guard play. You know, it's great to have size and it's great to have interior players, but your guards have to be able to deliver, and not only Megan Simmons, but Massengale as well. You know, she's played well up until this point. She's gotten in really good shape, but you got to be able to bring it every single day and every single possession, especially when the ball is in your hand.
And what was the better guard? You know, in that Tennessee, you guys saw that Tennessee Vanderbilt game. Christina Foggy and Jasmine Lister played better. They outplayed Tennessee. So when you talk about, you know, the guard play there, you know, I agree. I think that's going to be a huge factor. And I would say it's been a tough thing for Tennessee for a while now, you know, where you think there's a lot of talent there, but is there that guard or couple of guards, because Ariel Massengale is very talented too. But do they have the guard play that can, you know, we talk about, oh, will they make the Final Four? Heck, are they going to, you know, are they going to win the SEC? I mean, right now they're right in the middle of the pack. They have the same SEC record as Missouri, and they're behind. Even like a Florida. Florida's a team we haven't mentioned. They're 3-1 in the SEC. So it's going to be a battle for Tennessee, I think. Also, what seed are they going to get in the NCAA tournament? If they're a middle of – are they going to end up in the middle of the pack in the SEC? And then what seed are they going to get for the NCAA tournament?
You know, what you brought up Vanderbilt right before I was about to say that is a team with the two senior guards, with Lister and Fogey, that I think can make some noise and take some people by surprise at various points throughout the season. They may not be as talented overall as some of these other teams, but you get them in that building, which is a great home court advantage, and you give the ball to those two seniors, and I think that this is definitely going to be, you know, a real good and interesting year for Vanderbilt. So, and then the last conference I wanted to touch on was the ACC. We'll skip the AAC, thank you. But the ACC is definitely, you know, top to bottom, I have to say, as exciting as these other ones are, you know, I think the ACC is the best conference in America this year, with Notre Dame, Duke, North Carolina. North Carolina State is playing very well this year and ranked. Maryland, of course, is, you know, a top flight team. This to me is the conference that is going to knock each other off as they head towards postseason play and still get a bunch of top seeds. Now, Cindy, what are your thoughts on what you've seen so far out of the ACC?
Well, my heart breaks for Chelsea Gray. I'm just sick for her and this latest broken kneecap injury. She just makes it go and so fun to watch. So I think their one seed is at risk now. We already talked about Notre Dame. I'm very curious to see if Maryland can be as consistent as they've been to this point. I'm not quite sure what Brenda Fries wants long-term, but I like what she's doing short-term with managing minutes and distributing the basketball. Everything seems to be working beautifully at this juncture as you get into the heart of conference schedule. For me, I love the heart that North Carolina is playing with Sylvia Hatchell, in her battle with leukemia and the whole thing. I think that's a motivating factor. I just hope that her coming in and out of people's mindset and in practice and at games doesn't prove to be a distraction, that it's more of a positive than a negative. That's the only thing. I don't want those girls to think that they have to win for her. I know they want to win for her, but I'm worried that extra burden might be a little bit too much as they try to play without her on the sideline. And I'm very curious to see what goes on with Miami, because they're right in the thick of it. I miss Raquana Williams playing for that team and leading them, so I'm still trying to get over that. But it's a conference that's got a lot of depth and can put maybe the most teams in the tournament of any conference. If you break down who's playing the best basketball when it comes to Selection Monday, but I like this ACC. I hate that the Big East no longer exists, but I like the way the ACC breaks down now.
And I think, you know, we have to give I agree with everything that Cindy said. You look at what Wes Moore is doing in his first season. I mean, here's a guy who dominated at Chattanooga, who dominated a small conference. And, you know, he came in and you know, he said, I was at ACC Media Day, and he said, you know, I really don't know what this is going to be like. And so far, NC State's played really well. I mean, they had a 9-point loss to North Carolina, but they had a good non-conference slate. They were able to knock off Syracuse to start ACC season. Another team that talk about has been really, I think, pretty consistent, and you got to give the coach a lot of credit, and that's Sue Semeraal at Florida State. They're 14-2 and 2-1 despite the senior losses that they have. if you look at it right now, it's hard. And even Georgia Tech's a team to bring up. I think Michelle Joseph, that's a team that's very tough to play. If you look at it right now, there's eight teams, and, you know, there's a lot of basketball still to play, but there are eight ACC teams you could say are potentially right now tournament worthy.
You're absolutely right. You know, we have to take one small break for 1 second. And we're going to just talk about a few players in just a second. But first, we've got to give way to the needs of the children. And Steph has to depart from us.
Yeah.
Steph,
sorry, guys.
Thank you.
I've been on the road, and my little one is screaming for me to come suck him in. So.
Oh.
We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Time, Steph. Thanks again.
Thanks, Steph.
Uh-huh.
And then the three. We're gonna play Survivor this time with the round table. We're gonna see who can last the longest. Mel's gonna call in just a few minutes to see if he can. He'll take it to Vesta. But just briefly to wrap up, I want to talk about a few individual players and just go around the country real quick. Michelle. So far, without getting into the whole Player of the Year discussion, we know that it's gonna come down through the whole year. Looking at Sims and Stewart and Ogwumike. Who else has impressed you so far this season?
Well, I think I do think Kayla McBride's having a good season, and Jewel Lloyd. I mean, if you're talking about National Player of the Year caliber, I certainly bring in Alyssa Thomas. I think probably that National Player of the Year race, though, is that's a smaller race, obviously, than who's played really well so far. It will be interesting to see, for instance, how Odyssey – I think Odyssey Sims is going to bounce back in a big way from last night's loss, but it would be interesting to see how Odyssey – if she's going to continue at the scoring clip that she's been at for the rest of the year, and we can probably assume that Shanae Ogwumike is too – I'll be interested to see how that impacts voters. You know, like, Stewart's not going to score as many points because UConn has more balance. How is that going to impact how people might vote for National Player of the Year, or will it?
You know, Sydney, the old joke was that Dean Smith was the only person to hold Michael Jordan under 20 points a game. Is Gino Auriemma the only person holding Breonna Stewart? Cindy?
I feel like she's still trying to find her way, and she knows that she doesn't have to do it all. I think Shanae hits the floor every night thinking, wow, at minimum, I've got to get a double-double. And I'm, you know, now the sixth week in a row, the player of the week in the Pac-12, I have to bring it because my team needs it because I just don't have the supporting cast. Where Breonna Stewart just doesn't have to play with that pressure. She can uncork big game after big game at will, but she doesn't have to. You know, when you have somebody like Kalina Mosqueda-Lewis that you can throw the basketball to and she can drain 7 threes in a game, for example, you don't know the potential of Stewart because she's not in an Elena Deladon situation at Delaware last year where it was all her. I think Stewart could easily fill those shoes and play that exact same role and would win Player of the Year without a doubt. But because she's not being asked to, we're just not going to see that from her. And she's got a couple more years to win it now anyway.
You know, Michelle, when you look at these players, you know, a lot of these teams, like we mentioned, they seem to have the one star. They don't necessarily seem to have the second star. And that seems to be what's making Connecticut and Notre Dame different than most of them in the fact that, you know, they have multiple players. Duke is right there with, you know, when Gray was available. You know, as good as Trisha Liston is and some of the others, you know, you had the Williams and Gray combination. But, you know, Stanford has the one. Louisville has some talent, but it's, you know, mostly Shoney. And, you know, right on down the line, Alyssa Thomas, Odyssey Sims. Is that really why Connecticut and Notre Dame are 1-2?
Yeah, well, I'm sure it has something to do with it because when you're talking about Connecticut, you know, you have the names you just mentioned and then you have Bria Hartley and Mariah Jefferson and, you know, last night I think Kia Stokes and what she needed to do, she did it very well. So you have everybody that Connecticut puts out on the court plays really well. And you can say, well, do they have that much depth? Well, gosh, we've said that about Connecticut before in years. I swear, years they've gone undefeated. You know, you thought, well, do they have that much depth? They didn't need it, you know, because everybody they put out on the court played a lot of minutes and was really, really good. And that is definitely what makes it so – one of the things that makes it so hard to beat them. We had a fair amount of, I would think, some turnover, you know. Still have some teams where people are establishing themselves, and you know, by the end of the year, will you have a few more teams where you have players that are better established? I think that will be the case. But definitely, you know, having the kind of really, really high quality starting lineup that Connecticut has is tough. I mean, you're right. You know, Brianna Stewart, let's just say she doesn't have a good night. Oh, gee, you know, maybe Stephanie Dolson, Bria Hartley, Mariah Jefferson, and Kalina Mosqueda-Lewis, they're all going to have a bad night. I mean, it's going to be pretty tough because of that, because you have so many threats on that team.
I think what's most impressive to me about Connecticut is the ability for the bench to provide points. They do that unlike any other team in the nation. There isn't that much drop-off from when Brianna Stewart takes the seat and is replaced by the next person in line. And you can't say that about any other school in the country. It's the level of consistency where the kids have confidence to score the basketball coming off the bench and are expected to maintain the scoring margin that they inherit when they give up their seat on the bench. And you just don't see that from other teams. And to me, that's the separating factor for Connecticut.
And I think you had that, you know, in Baylor's best years in the last few years. Baylor really did have that where you could go, you know, you could go to the seventh kid, you know, you bring in other kids, and they did have, they had a very deep team. Duke is a deep team even without Chelsea Gray. I mean, obviously the big part of this is emotional. She's been their assist leader. She is the table setter. But, you know, last year Alexis Jones really stepped forward when Chelsea was hurt. This is still a Duke team that has a lot of talent and has a lot of scoring ability. The question's going to be, can they emotionally get past what they've lost, which is a big deal, and, you know, have people step forward? And, you know, they've still got all these other seniors. You know, they're Chelsea's gone, but there's a lot of other people there. These are the last basketball games they're playing in college, and can they step forward and, you know, and fill in for what they're losing with her?
And unfortunately, this is a Duke team that has experience stepping up without Chelsea Gray, because she has just been bit by the injury bug like nobody else.
You know, I think that we've hit on a couple of very valid points when it comes, you know, guard play is key just to advancing and moving forward. You know, not just points. I think you need to get – I think we could combine it as just positive production out of your bench. Because if you – for example, like even at UConn last night, I don't believe they got a point out of their bench last night. But you look at the contribution that Kia Stokes gave them in that game last night. And, you know, Kia Stokes had 18 rebounds versus Temple the other night. Coming off the bench. So when you look at the teams that are giving you positive production, have that guard play, have the go-to player, have strong out-of-conference, if not conference play, sounds like a recipe for a championship-type team.
Absolutely.
And the one last thing I want to say about Connecticut is, and you saw it last night, is the execution when it most counts. And in that environment and atmosphere, what impresses me is that they can come, you know, they have this game against Temple where, you know, they could basically sleepwalk through it and win, but they didn't, you know, but that is such a different environment and an atmosphere than what they're facing in Baylor. Yet the execution was still really good, especially when they really needed it to be. And that's what you see out of Connecticut, that they execute well. And it sounds like so boring to talk about execution, but that is the key. What they remind me of is when you think of like a great quarterback who doesn't get flustered. You know, he finds a way to stay in the pocket, or he buys himself a little bit more time, and he doesn't force the pass. He knows what he wants to get. You see that with Connecticut, and Gino talked about it last night, that they do this drill in practice where he makes them pass the ball because he wants them to get the right shot, and that they are able to do that in the most, you know, in tough circumstances. I mean, there's a lot of people screaming, and, you know, they're late in the game, and they're being challenged, which they haven't really faced this year. They're still able to execute. To me, that is one of the things that just consistently is so impressive about the teams that Coach Orema has.
What jumped off the page at me in that game in particular was Odyssey Sims was held in check for the final 10 minutes of the game. So that was defense. The defense stepped up. And then, as you mentioned, Michelle, just calm, cool, and collected. It was the senior leadership. It was the championship swagger. Like, we've got this. We know what we're doing. We just have to do what we do well. And it just leapt off the screen. My question to you, Michelle, since you had a front row seat, from my couch, it looked like a Final Four atmosphere. Is that how it felt?
Yeah, it was great, and it was really great to see that the Baylor fans, and Gino even joked about it, they appreciate Connecticut. I mean, they really enjoy having Connecticut come down there. He joked, he's like, wow, the fans down here actually like me. Now I'm going to Rutgers. And everybody laughed because we know, you know, he's not as popular at Rutgers. But but they appreciate, you know, they I think that there's definitely a feeling, you know, with Baylor fans that they know, they understand that this is a great program. They understand this is great basketball that they're seeing. And it was a really fun atmosphere. And I think it was really good, you know, even though there was no upset, the fact that there at least was a potential for it and that we saw a team step forward and actually, you know, go toe-to-toe with UConn and just say, hey, we're willing to do this, was really good for this season. You know, even if Baylor didn't get the win, they at least, you know, they showed that they're willing to you know, to go out there and play well, and they weren't afraid of playing against the Huskies.
Well, I heard that UConn's actually not going to be able to get to play at Rutgers this year. That there's going to they've already arranged some George Washington Bridge traffic to keep the Huskies from getting over.
David, I do want to tell you just a cute little story from last night, and maybe it's already been on some of the UConn writers' blogs, but Julie Bennett, who's the Baylor SID, one of her friends who's a big Baylor fan, loves Gino, huge Gino fan, and this lady had, unfortunately, she'd hurt her ankle and wasn't able to come to the game, and she was so disappointed because she wanted to see Gino in person. And Julie asked Gino if he would do a little video saying hi to this fan, and he did. And I saw it, and it was just cute. It really was. And he was like, hey, you know, I hope you enjoyed watching us tonight on TV. The only thing that would have been better is if you could have been here. And I think for the coach of a number one team in the country, you know, to take the time to do something for a fan from another team says a lot about him. I just thought that was a really neat moment. And I think probably Gino was probably pretty happy because he thinks, well, gee, they would never ask me to do this in some places because they don't like me. I think he probably appreciates. And also, you guys may have, I don't know if you saw it on TV, when they announced the national team, the four kids, you know, Kalina Mosqueda-Lewis and Stephanie Dolson, Brianna Stewart and Odyssey Sims, that are on the national team pool, and they also said this team's going to be coached by Gino Auriemma. There was a big roar, you know, in the Farrell Center. They really do appreciate what he's done and how good a team that he brings in.
Very nice.
That's neat. Yeah, that's really cool.
No,
and
no,
I don't
think
John Miller is making a video for a fan. I'm just putting that out there.
You know, I definitely think that I consider myself fortunate that I get to cover his team's games on a regular basis, no question about it. So, all right, Cindy, to wrap this up, tell everybody where they're going to see you next.
Let's see. I have a couple weeks off because I have some Diamondback stuff to do before we head to Australia for the Major League Baseball season opener against the Dodgers down under. So I am back on the air with Pac-12 Network's Washington State University at Colorado, and that is the second week of February, which puts us at the 15th of February. No, excuse me, the 16th. It's a Sunday game, WSU at Colorado.
Should be a good one, too, with a lot of conference implications at that point.
I know.
And, Michelle, we're going to, as always, we find you on ESPN. But also, you know, tell everybody, you and Brenda do a great job on your side venture, so we'll call it.
Yeah, we do a little. Brenda and I do a little podcast. So, you know, if people aren't sick of hearing me ramble on your show, they can hear Brenda and I do that. We'll be having a podcast actually this week and probably focus a little bit. You know, we're both based here in Kansas City and tend to focus a fair amount on the Big 12. But we just love, you know, we've been good friends for a long time. We just love chatting about basketball. So it's really kind of it's just fun. It's fun to do. I appreciate anybody who would take the time to listen to it.
Well, I love listening, and then I saw what Beth and Debbie do. You guys need to Skype that so they can throw it on .com.
Yeah, I guess we could do that. You know, I always think I'm better just like on podcasts and the radio. I don't know that I'm the most. I'm not as comfortable a lot of times actually because you know you can do podcasts on the radio when you're still wearing your pajamas. You know, that's the whole thing. Boy, you got to actually have to clean up your act when you're going to be on Skype or on video. But we really do enjoy doing it. And just, like I said, appreciate, you know, people taking the time to basically listen to us, you know, talk about something we love to talk about anyway.
No, it's great. Like, very informative.
What I like about it, and this is, you know, and I think that Debbie would probably be happier just being audio these days too, is that, once you go video, it's got to be short.
Exactly.
And that's you know, the problem. Beth and Debbie do such an incredible job. I've always joked that, you know, I want Mike's podcast to grow up to be shoot around. But with them on video now, it's not as enjoyable because it's shorter. You know, just those few minutes are great, but I want more. And that's what's great about you guys is that you don't have that time constraint. Now, Brenda, on the other hand, I have to say, Brenda's going after Debbie's title as the hardest working woman in the business. You know, she just seems to be showing up everywhere. It's either Debbie or Brenda that's covering the game.
Yeah, we might have to have like a Debbie versus Brenda, you know, wrestling match or something at the Final Four for that title. I am just kidding, but they both do that. They and I think in both cases it's a labor of love. They just they're kind of travel warriors who love to and they both also and I do think this is something that I love about their coverage is I feel like they both really love to break down the game in you know in their broadcasts and that's something I think they're both really good at.
Yeah, but the problem is when they're doing this, I can't get them on the round table. They're too busy. Well, ladies, thank you very much for taking the time this evening. I really appreciate, you know, the time spent talking on this. It's always a labor of love talking to you guys, as you like to say. You know, you guys do a great job covering the game for us, and, you know, I love having you on the podcast. Thank you very much again.
Thank you.